If I were to ask you how many people you thought you seriously influenced in your life, how many people do you think you seriously influence in your lifetime? Some of us may say 2 or 3 or 5 or 10, 15, 20, maybe. Well, studies have actually been done on this. You know what the number is? About 250. It's kind of sobering, isn't it? The things I say, the things I do or don't do, seriously influence 250 people. Well, that's just almost staggering, isn't it? Should make us all think a little more carefully about what we say and do. If I'm going to affect 250 people, and of course, as Christians, we're going to affect them, especially as to their eternal destiny. That's just sobering. There's no way to hear that and not be a little sobered about those numbers and how serious our daily walk is. I influence people at home. I influence people, hopefully, in church. I influence people at different jobs I have or have had in the past. I influence them one way or the other. This could be good or bad, of course. Good or bad, I influence people. And 250 people who come in contact with me on a regular basis throughout my life will be influenced either for good or for bad because of what I say or do. Jesus knew the importance of this. In His first, what we call His Sermon on the Mount, that first recorded sermon, He spends some time talking about a person's influence, a person who would be a part of that kingdom. He told them this. This is also in your bulletin. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 13. He gives what's commonly called the Beatitudes. Then right after that, He says in verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth." Who's He addressing? You know, Jesus is up on this mountain and He's talking to people who would later form the church. And so He's giving them, these people at the time, these are the type of people I want in My kingdom. He says, I want you to know that when you're in the kingdom, you're going to be the salt of the earth. The salt of the earth. So specifically, He's talking to you and I. Not just people in the world, but you and I. That's who He's addressing. People in the kingdom, His followers, His disciples. He says, you are the salt of the earth. That's the context, and that's not what He says about it. He says, if the salt loses its flavor, it can, apparently, because Jesus says, if it does, so it's possible to lose that flavor. He says, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Now think about the implications of that statement. Okay, I'm going to affect 250 people in this world, good or bad, by my influence, by what I say and do or don't do, or don't say. I can influence people by not saying something. I can influence people by not doing something. If we look at the Bible, beginning in the very first chapter, from Genesis 1 and just going all the way through, we see that there's a very strong relationship between the number of righteous people and God's blessing that nation. What happened in Genesis chapter 6? The world had been going on for some time between Genesis 1 and Genesis chapter 6. People had been being born. They were living. They were marrying. They were having children. They were having families. They were dying just in the normal course of events for a very long time, between Genesis 1 and Genesis 6. But by the time of Genesis 6, something had happened. A very serious something had happened. And that something was that the salt had lost its flavor. That's what had happened. That was the serious something that had happened. It had gotten so bad that God said, the only way to remedy this situation is just to get rid of it all and start over again. He says that's the only remedy, and that's what God said was the only remedy. He says there's nothing else to do. The salt is so bad, there's not enough righteous people left in the world to affect, to influence the rest of the world. Not enough righteous people. At this time, there were millions of people on the face of the earth. Millions of people by Genesis chapter 6. And so few righteous people that God said, I'm just going to have to just erase everything and start over. Not enough salt. You are the salt of the earth. There wasn't enough salt then. It wasn't having any influence on society. Not enough righteous people. So God said, enough's enough. So, starts over. 8 people repopulate the planet. 8 out of multiple millions of people. 8 people start over. And we see those 8 people, they start repopulating the planet. Many of them are good. Some aren't. We come down to the time of Abraham. Genesis 16, 17, 18, in there, we find that there are some cities that have become pretty evil. 2 of them are named, and that's Sodom and Gomorrah. God knows how evil the inhabitants of the city are in that area. But He gives them a chance. Says, okay, because I just want to find a few righteous people. And He starts with more and gets fewer and fewer. Get down to just 10. Just go and just find me 10 righteous people. 10 people who are positively influencing the others in the town. That's all. I just want 10 righteous people that by their conversation, by their actions, by their behavior, are influencing for good the people in those cities. I want 10. That's it. I'll spare the whole place for 10. Couldn't find 10. Couldn't do it. Salt had lost its flavor. God said, okay, I've just got to destroy it then. And of course He does. Fire and brimstone comes down from heaven, destroys everything in those cities, and wipes them out. The salt had lost its flavor, had lost its effectiveness. You are the salt of the earth. You know, you look, we see the flood, we see Sodom and Gomorrah, and we just go down through time, and no nation, no group of people, no society can last very long unless there are enough righteous people to keep it going. That's been God's idea and His plan and His practice since the beginning of time. He allows societies and nations, groups of people to exist and survive and thrive only if there are enough righteous people in that society or nation or culture. And if there's not, He does what? He purges. He says, okay, that's enough. It's happened to nation after nation after nation throughout the centuries. Throughout the centuries, that's what has happened. God went through a purging process. Salt lost its effectiveness. It lost its flavor. It lost its influence, its power. So He said, time is up. Many people, I think, have the mistaken idea that God has chosen America. America isn't God's people or His nation. Never has been, never will be. We're not His chosen nation. He doesn't have a chosen nation politically. Doesn't have one. And if people think that regardless of how evil and wicked our country gets and immoral, that God is still going to allow it to exist, those people are mistaken. That's not true. There's nothing in the Bible that says that's going to happen. America is not God's chosen country. So why would we think if the salt loses its flavor that he'll allow this country to go on? Nothing in the Bible that suggests that he will. Now that's sobering. That's a sobering thought. God purges. A verse in the Old Testament I think is real appropriate, Psalms 127. Please read that with me. Psalms 127, the very first verse. Psalms 127, verse 1. The psalmist says this. Psalms 127, verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Notice the second part. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Unless the Lord guards the city. You are the salt of the earth. If you stop exerting a godly, righteous influence in our country, then what happens? Our country becomes good for nothing. Just like Jesus says, good for nothing. That's true throughout the world. That's true throughout the world. A Christian, God's follower, believers, disciples, we have a responsibility in our society, in our world, to exert a godly influence. Well, he goes on, Jesus does, after saying that you're the salt of the earth, he says also you're the light of the world. A city that's set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. So let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. I'm not the source of light. Jesus is, right? Jesus says, I'm the light of the world, John 8:12. I'm the light of the world. We're not the light of the world. We're supposed to reflect the light of the world. That's my job and that's your job. We're to reflect the light. We're not the source of the light. Jesus is. So what I'm supposed to be reflecting to the world is what Jesus looks like. That's what I'm supposed to reflect to the world. And so many places in the Bible talk about how we're to be transformed into His image. You know, day by day, we're supposed to become more and more like Him. It's like looking in a mirror or through a lens, and every day it becomes a little more focused. And what does the world see more and more each day? Well, Christ. So I'm reflecting His light. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. Not making up my own light or being the source of my own light. I'm supposed to be reflecting His light. What does that mean? I mean, I reflect to the world His beliefs, His attitudes, His words, His actions, His behavior, His quality, His characteristics. That's what I want. That's what Paul wanted in Galatians chapter 2. Paul says, it's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. Paul didn't want people to see Paul. Paul wanted people to see Christ. That's what he wanted. Paul was reflecting the light of the world. That was his job. That's my job. And that's your job as a Christian, to reflect the light of the world. The world is darkness. The Bible's always shown the world as a place of darkness. Ignorance, religious ignorance, unbelief, religious error. And so what am I supposed to be doing? Well, I'm supposed to be shining light, not my own source of light, but the light of Christ. And I'm supposed to shine that wherever there's darkness. And I do that in two ways, the Bible says. Number one, by teaching. By teaching. That's how I can shed light. That's how you can shed light. shed light in darkness. Wherever there's religious ignorance and error, wherever there's unbelief, I can shed light by teaching people the truth. Because the truth is light. The truth brings light. You know, Jesus, in John's account of the gospel, in the very first chapter of that, talks about how Jesus was light. He came into the world to shed light in darkness. The darkness didn't get it, though. Darkness didn't get it. So I'm supposed to teach and bring light into the world by teaching people what truth is and what right is and what good is. That is what I'm supposed to be doing. Number two, I have to practice those beliefs in the world. I have to practice those beliefs. I have to show that Christ is living in me. And what does that mean? That means when I'm in the world, when I'm with other people, when I'm interacting with other people, they need to see me. If I have a choice between being honest or being dishonest, I choose honesty. Well, what if that gets me into trouble? So be it. I choose honesty. If I have a choice to gossip about somebody, say something that's not true, pass something on, the Christian does what? Chooses not to. And the world sees that in me, and therefore they see Christ in me, and I'm spreading light. Because I'm making the world a little bit better place to live, just a little bit. Not spreading anything false, not being dishonest. People need to see in me that I'm living a moral life, not immoral, but a life that's ethical. Don't do things behind people's back and that type of thing. That's not spreading light. That's spreading darkness. People see sin. People see wickedness. People see evil. That's what they see. And I'm not supposed to be doing that. Two wonderful verses that show this kind of this two-headed aspect or two-part aspect of this influence. The first one is in Romans chapter 2. Notice in particular just one verse. Romans chapter 2. Notice verse 24. Romans 2, verse 24. Says, "For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you." Now here's the test. Here's your test. Here's my test. The people I work with, or people I know, the people I associate with, after they know who I am, how I live, how I talk, how I behave, my characteristics and so forth, and they learn that I'm a Christian, I'm a follower of Christ, what's the result of that knowledge? Do they blaspheme God because of me or praise God because of me? Because they'll do one or the other. That's what he's saying here. By my behavior that they see, will they blaspheme God when they find out I'm a follower of Him? Or will they glorify God? Which will they do? When they find out that I worship at some particular location or with some particular group, are they absolutely astonished at that? See, am I spreading light? Now, the flip side of Romans 2:24 is found in the book of Philippians. And let's look at that briefly. Philippians chapter 2, verse 15. Paul wrote these words. He says that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world. We live in a crooked and perverse generation, just like the Philippians did. But yet our behavior is supposed to be so radically different than the world's that it's like turning a light on in a dark room. It's like a beacon. That's what he says. That's what we're supposed to be like. That's supposed to be our behavior, our life, our example, our words, all of those things. That's what he says. You know, if we don't do the shining, we shouldn't expect anybody else to. As Jesus said back in Matthew 5, you are the salt of the earth. You're the light. You're supposed to reflect that light. Don't expect people in the world to do it, because the people in the world are the ones that are in darkness. So it's up to us. Notice what Peter and John did, Acts chapter 4, a great example in the Bible. In Acts chapter 4, soon after the beginning of the church, a church hadn't been established very long. Peter and John are basically arrested, we might say. They had healed a lame man. And notice in Acts chapter 4, verse 13, the result of this. Now, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men, they marveled and they realized that they had been with Jesus. Notice these were unbelievers. Unbelievers even realized and understood Peter and John had been with Jesus. Their behavior was so totally different than anybody else's, they knew something was different about these two. And what was it? They had been with Jesus. They were reflecting the light of Jesus. They weren't ashamed of Jesus. They weren't afraid to proclaim Jesus. They weren't afraid to live for Jesus. They didn't walk like the rest of the world did. And that same Peter, in Acts chapter 4, wrote this in 1 Peter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. Peter writes these words. 1 Peter 4, verses 3 and 4. Peter says, verse 3, "For we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run with them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you." They think it's strange. That's how many people react, isn't it? Why won't you be dishonest? Why won't you say these things and you could make a lot of money or get promoted or whatever? People think it's odd. Some do. Peter said, we've spent enough of our past time doing those things. We don't do them anymore. They loved the Word. That's what Peter and John did in Acts 4. They loved the Word. And so they preached it, they taught it, they believed it, they practiced it. That's what their behavior was based on, was God's Word. You're the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. Our behavior is critical to our nation, to our community, especially to the church. Now, the Bible teaches that sincerity alone, behavior alone, doesn't save us, but it's still essential. One must still become a child of God by believing and obeying His Word. But at the same time, we have to examine ourselves very carefully about our influence. Think about at your death, you will have influenced 250 people one way or the other, either for good or bad. And it's entirely up to us as to which it is. We can influence them for the good or we can influence them for the bad. our choice. Are we preserving our nation by our godly behavior? Or are we speeding to its end by what we do? You've probably seen many church marquees, church signs, church bulletins that said this: if you were arrested and charged with being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? And most of that comes from our influence, our behavior. Our behavior. Are we influencing people in the right way? Has your salt lost its flavor? Is it worth nothing but to just be thrown out and trampled under by the foot of men? Is your light really reflecting Christ? His qualities, His characteristics, His behaviors, His thoughts, His attitudes, His beliefs? And do people see Christ living in you? That's the importance of our influence. You are the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. We're going to influence somebody this afternoon. I'm sure you will. Whatever you do and wherever you go, you're going to influence somebody. Tonight, you're going to influence somebody. Your family, your friends, you might be working tonight. You're going to influence somebody in some way. And will it be for good or whether it for bad? That's how important it is. How has your influence been? Do we need to confess that it's not been like it should be? That I've done things openly and publicly that's kind of brought reproach or shame on Christ? We need to ask for forgiveness. As we sing this song, we need to think very seriously about our influence in the world and whether it's for good or bad. If you need to respond, don't wait any later. Come as we stand and sing this song.